Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Spring Semester 2016. Lecture 20, delivered on April 4, 2016. The title of this lecture is Portfolio Risk.
Today, Portfolio Risk. This is an extension of the topics from last week when I was talking about securities risk and risk in a more generalized way. Now we're reaching into the actual structure of how risk declines in a portfolio. Bear with me. I'm going to erase this mess, this pre-lecture mess here. Show you something here very quickly. You and I are combat buddies. You're my battle buddy. And we're in combat. Okay, we have the hail of bullets flying at us. And then when they run out of bullets, they're throwing litter at us. And when they run out of that, then they're throwing tree limbs at us. But now, you are following me. You're zigging when I zig. You're zagging when I zag. Okay, so now, is that we need to at least one of us survive. Ideally, we'd like to have both of us survive, but when we're zigging and zagging together, that one shot could kill us both, or at least make us hurt our feelings pretty badly. But if we're doing different things, kind of for the most part, well, that's a different matter entirely. You see, because then a shot might hit one of us, but it wouldn't hit the other. And then another shot might hit the other one, but not hit me. So there's less likelihood of catastrophic destruction to our bro team here, okay? That I open it up with. Now I'm going to take it to another one. I can't start with you, madam. I have to start with a male for this. Sir, you're going to die. I've told you that. You're going to die. You know that, right?
Okay.
Well, not okay, man. You're going to die someday, okay? Yeah. Now, along the way, though, I am going to take you on the journey that is your life. You didn't know you were getting such service for your money here at this school. We're going to start your timeline with your birth. And we're going to talk about health care costs. You were born. Kind of a scrawny, sickly baby, constantly whining, wah, I want food more than twice a week and all that. So your costs up front are kind of high. And then it gets worse. You know, we got to get you the immunizations, and then there's that colic that makes your diarrhea really bad. And then you get a little healthier as a toddler, and then there's that first tricycle. And then you're okay for a few years and everything's going good. And then you find out around 9 years old about explosives. And then you got a few years, and then that acne was just really bad. Then you get into your teenage years, and there was that funny disease that your mom really didn't want to talk about that you got. But then you get into your early 20s. You're starting to get a little better. which is actually fairly common in younger adults, is that they begin to... You remember when you were a kid, do you have memories of vomiting half the time and being miserable and snot-nosed? We get sick in our early years, but then we get sort of develop the immunities and we're starting to feel better in our 20s and 30s. Get comfortable with that. It goes away. But you're feeling better. You have a couple of little health crises, but nothing bad. Then you're in your 30s, cholesterol hits first. And then there's that heart attack. And then there's the diabetes. And then there's the Viagra. And then there's those hair implants. And then there's that hip replacement. And then there's all those heart medicines that you start having to take. And then those antidepressants that they give you so that you won't walk around talking funny to people. Into your 70s, it gets worse and worse, and then fortunately you die. Okay? Your life. Now we're going to take your life. Let's say you were born at about the same time as this unfortunate young man here. Now, you were a pretty healthy kid. You had a few coughs and things, the typical stuff of toddlers, but you had an illness or two early on. You had something going on with your teeth, and then your pigtails just didn't have that perkiness, so your mom had your hair transplanted. And then you get into your early teens, then you find out about that, something really, really bad. I mean, it's just one of the worst things that could possibly have happened to a child, a teenage girl. You found out about boys. Your father got out of prison fairly early after the shotgun incident. You're relatively healthy, but you do have childbirth, and then you have some things go wrong a little bit of a hip problem. Then you have more medicines, but you're relatively healthy, but you have a couple of crises. Then you have that really funny stroke that makes you have a I support Donald Trump bumper sticker. No, you got other things happening to you. But you get sicker as you get older, and you live a lot longer than this young man does. But you have to have some tubes put in you to keep you from peeing all over. And then finally you die. This is one of the most important principles in many areas of finance, including stocks, insurance, financial planning, and it pervades much of how we model business cash flows when we are dealing with people. These two costs were correlated to some extent, but there was a degree of non-correlation. Notice there were times, a number of times, when one person's cost was going up, the other's was going down, and vice versa. These were canceling each other out. They were acting to smooth each other. Now, if I were to put more and more people into this, their healthcare costs into this, you would see that over a period of time, the total cost in the system would start to look more and more like a flat line, especially as we brought younger people in, as older people died. As long as we kept the pool widely spread, we would eventually get to a place where there was a hum. This is risk pooling. It is a fundamental principle of insurance. The more people you put into a risk pool, for health, for any kind of insurance, the less volatility, there will still be a volatility. A volatility that is common to all of them. But the individual quirks and farts, they will go away. It is the basis of so many things in your life. Now I'm going to do something that will humiliate the hell out of you. Okay? I want you to say, la, 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 la. Okay, sir. Now I want you to say, la, 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 la.
La, 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 la.
See, you and you, you suck as singers.
No.
Now, I want you to say, la, 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 la.
La, 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 la,
la. And, madam, to add a female voice, la, 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 la.
La, 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 la.
Now, all of you together. Still sucks. No, if you get enough people to go to sing together, you get the choir effect. Each of them can suck as a singer, but when you put them together, you have these magnificent, it sounds like something that's professional. And it doesn't matter who it is. As a matter of fact, kids are wonderful with this because kids' voices usually are not very good. Once in a while, you see one of those child stars who's awesome. But for the most part, children's voices are not very good. But you hear those children's choirs, they are just phenomenal. And it's because of the same. Their individual modulations and quirks just cancel each other out. I forgot to bring it today. I was going to bring in something that was pretty, it's one of the most incredible things that I've heard in a long time. A group of acoustics researchers recorded out in a woodland area these crickets. Beep, beep, beep. It was just loud, noisy. I used to hate it. And then he said, all right, now let's put together, they got a bunch of recordings. And then they put all the recordings together and then they slowed them down. By one third. I swear to you, it sounded like one of the greatest orchestras on earth. I could almost tell what piece it was by a famous master. It was like a violins. It was incredible. And it was the same choir effect with insects, no less. This is not some insurance phenomenon. This is not even a finance phenomenon. It is a principle of nature phenomenon, that we, when we put things together that each have its own randomness, the correlated parts, the uncorrelated parts of that randomness will cancel each other out. They will make each other go away. This is not just the basis for insurance. This is portfolio diversification. Every stock is going to swing for two reasons. It's going to swing because of the peculiarities of the company itself. But it's also going to swing because of forces beyond that company. And that is where portfolio diversification comes in. The individual quirks of each company stock, pushing the price up and down, will cancel each other out. And all that will remain is a common risk. The problem is that any two given stocks, if we had two perfectly uncorrelated stocks, they could cancel out all of each other's weirdness, okay? And then all you'd have is common risk. But unfortunately, stocks, even when they are in different industries, there's underlying correlation of them so that's why we have to get a bunch of stocks together so that in their aggregate, they will cancel out each other's quirk. This is where correlation comes in. I imagine you heard it in your statistics course. It's designated by the Greek lowercase rho. Correlation coefficient. This is specifically the Pearson correlation coefficient. There are a couple of different ones. But the one, and I'm going to show you something interesting here. Let's take some ticker symbols. Let's take Target. And I think I do this GM Oops, GM. MSFT. NFLX. I'm going to take just four different stocks. I think I can do it this way. Start date, let's do January 1st to March 31st. Correlation pieces, rolling correlation, view the correlation. Okay. Right here is the correlation matrix. Target and GM, their price volatilities have only about a 29%, 0.29. That's a low correlation. They would be good to put together to cancel out each other's quirkiness. Target and Microsoft have a low correlation. Target and Netflix have an even lower correlation. General Motors and Microsoft, actually, I've always kind of been curious about this. That's actually half of their diversifiable risk, in a way, is correlated. So they don't help each other to get rid of stuff together. And I've always wondered, sometimes you can have an explanation. Well, they're in the same industry, and you know they got common board of directors, or they use the same technology. Yeah, but I mean, sometimes it's just like, there's not a good explanation. GM and Microsoft have 0.43. Netflix and Microsoft have middling. Netflix and GM have a very low. You see them? How you look at the correlations? What you're doing is you're looking for stocks that don't have a lot of, in other words, they don't zig and zag together so much. That's what you're looking for. And I'm sure the authors of the book would shoot me for describing it like that, but that's literally what it is. The zigs and the, for one, like Target against GM, they zig and zag, or Target against Netflix. Those, one zigs and the other zags. There's very little they have in common as far as price law. In other words, when one is going up, the other is not likely to be going up or something like that. You could think about it that way too. Let me take it back just a minute here. Taking a few other stocks that would be interesting to see what their correlation is. I'm going to look up, just curiosity, type stock, JCPenney, JCP, okay, good. Let me look at Sears. Sears Holdings, SHLD. What's another retailer? Oh, Gap. Yeah, GPS. Okay, I'm going to pull these three up together, okay. HLD, JCP, Gap. SHLD, I want that one to be. I'm trying to think what else would be another one that would be a retailer. Limited, is Limited still public? Abercrombie, A&F, yeah, A&F. A&F, okay, let's take it from the first of the year, January 1 to March 31. Daily returns, 60 days trading on the roll. Wait a minute, GPS, the... Let me pull this one up. Sorry about that. Okay. Abercrombie against Gap. Look at that one. Probably, okay. No. It's your turn. Just give it a call. What would you call it? Why is the high correlation with Abercrombie and Fitch and Gap? The Gap.
They both sell the similar products.
Similar products. You're almost there. You're almost there. What else? You're getting there. Both demographic. You're getting there too. They got the same. Customer base. They're aiming at the same customer base. So revenue. Where goes the income? Of the customers for one goes the income of the customers for the other. So the revenues are going to do very similar things, which is going to articulate to the bottom line. Also, their business models seem to both, they're both in trouble, and their business models have shown, essentially they've boxed themselves in, both of them have. They don't have a way out of their business model. Abercrombie and Fitch. How could it possibly change? It's Abercrombie and Fitch. You go in there, it's pitch black. You look at the catalog, and there are underage, half-naked models. They've staked their claim on something that if they were to suddenly come out tomorrow, we are now targeting 40 to 50-year-olds with polyester pants on their mind. It would fall apart. The Gap, the same thing. They've staked their demographics, just like you guys were talking about, and that's it. Game over for them. And then Sears against Abercrombie and Fitch, very low correlation. Obviously, they have different demographic targets completely. Kids who would go to Abercrombie and Fitch would probably prefer to set themselves on fire before they'd go in and buy even underwear at Sears. So there you go. But if you're thinking about building a portfolio, and this is where I'm trying to get this course back to real, is if you're thinking about building a portfolio, do one of these and look at some of the stocks that you're thinking of putting in. Because the beta is important for risk, but also look at the correlation of them. The lower the correlation, I got to be a little careful about saying this, but the lower the correlation, the fewer stocks you have to put into a portfolio to get good portfolio diversification. I mean, if you're just going throwing stocks in, 30, 40, 50, before you've got canceling each other, they're canceling out each other's unsystematic risk. But if you're carefully tailoring so that the stocks that you're putting in have low correlation, then you're probably going to get rid of unsystematic risk faster. And that's another danger too, a real big danger, what we call the side bet phenomenon. Well, I've got a nice diversified portfolio, but I heard this guy say, you know, why did you buy a stock like this stock, and so I'm going to buy a round lot and throw that into my portfolio. Well, good for you. But if you think about it, if the correlation of that stock with one of the heavies in your portfolio is significant, then you're probably actually damaging your portfolio's diversification by tossing it in there. It would be sort of like you've got a very well-balanced load. I have a brother. He's a very big man in his business. He used to weigh 700 pounds. Kid you not. You know, we would get on the bus. And then he'd come on. I'm not going to go any further with it. Okay? It was a gospel evangelism tour. We were on stage. Everything was great. And then he'd come in, this old church, you know, he came in. He was going to hit the piano and play it. These old pianos, he'd break those bench. Flinders. There went our free will offerings. Okay? That's enough. Be careful what you just toss into a portfolio. Because if it's got a strong correlation with something else or something, a couple of things that are major in your portfolio, they could actually end up causing your portfolio to come unbalanced like you wouldn't believe. That's the next thing that I need to get into. And it's a pretty kind of a lame exercise here. But by the way, this is portfoliovisualizer.com. is a great site for just checking the correlations. When you're building your portfolio, just have a look at your correlations. You might be surprised at how little diversification you're getting. I've got 10 stocks, but if they've all got correlations of 0.6, 0.7 with each other, even 0.4s, you're not really helping. You're not diversifying that much. But let me show you the next piece of this, too. And I'm going to go over here. Let me do Yahoo Finance to do this. I just want to grab. Okay. Your turn. And I'm just going to write some numbers, write these numbers on the board as I get them. And in order for me to do this, I'm going to have you. Bob, we are speaking now with an investment guru from Wall Street, and everyone knows this man's name. And what we are going to ask him today is, what is your favorite stock? Please. Google. It's not called Google. It's called Alphabet, for God's sake. Global, Skynet. Okay. Alphabet Incorporated. Okay, Google. Okay. 745.29. We're going to do a flat portfolio. And we're going to put round lots. $74,529. Okay.
We are now going to turn to another investment guru. What is your choice for stocks this week?
Twitter.
Okay, so we got Twitter. $17.09 on a round lot into the portfolio, $1,709. And finally, we are going to turn this decision over to our most famous investment analyst. What is your choice for stocks this week?
Nordstrom.
Nordstrom. Love the store, hate the prices. JWN, 55.55. We've got a round lot in our portfolio, so the total value of Nordstrom is 55.55. We'll stop the portfolio here. Let's say we got a three-stock portfolio. Now, before I go on, what I would kind of like to do, seriously, is just very quickly, G-O-O-G, T-W-T-R, and J-W-N, start date, let's do the first of the year. 31st. well, you guys are actually pretty damn good. Look at this. Those are actually pretty darn good. That's a nice low correlations. You guys yourself an interesting portfolio here. Now, it's probably not surprising. Nordstrom has a ridiculously low correlation coefficient with Twitter. They're so unrelated that their industries are that that's probably the primary reason. Twitter against Google, interestingly enough, they serve different purposes entirely. So you see that they're quiet too. And Nordstrom against Google, pathetically small correlation. So this is actually, you're seeing that that would be the start. It's the start of a darn nice portfolio. Okay, so now, the next thing we're going to do here is I want to add these three up. Let me add these three up just very quickly here. Calculator. What the frick? Yeah, I'll shut your ass up. I was wondering what the heck was going on there. It's some ad. Plus 1709. Plus 5555. So the total value of my portfolio is $81,793. $81,793. Okay, now the next thing that you'll want to do is we'll get the weights of the individual portfolio components, which would be for the Google part, 74,529 over 81,793. Plus, and then, you know, we'll add them up. They should add up to one. 1709 over 81,793. And 5555 over 81,793. Get the weights of these in the portfolio. Okay. So now I'm going to do 74,529 divided by 81. So that one is honking 91.12%. 91.12% of the portfolio. Plus, then I'd have 1709 divided by, calling that memory, 2.09% of the portfolio. And 5555 divided by, recalling it, 6.79%. And that should add up to 100%. That's how you get the weights of the in the portfolio. Okay, you good on that? Now, can you see what's wrong with this portfolio real quickly? Or maybe it's not wrong. Your first impression would be to say, well, this is so unbalanced. This is way unbalanced, this portfolio. Actually, no. Google is constituting a much more significant component of the market than are either Twitter or Nordstrom. Therefore, in a well-balanced portfolio, weighted properly, Google should take up more space, more weight than small companies. Should it take up this much? Well, probably not, but there you go. Now, the last thing to do here is that what we can do from here, and now I'm going to bring this back up and hope that moron ad doesn't start honking at me again. We're going to get the beta of Google is 1.03. The beta of Twitter my ass. What do you mean it doesn't have a beta? Well, let's say the beta of it is 2.20. That's right. It wouldn't have. It might not have a beta. Okay. The heck with that. Okay. In JWN, a 0.77, a 0.78. Okay, so now we can find the beta of the portfolio. The beta of the portfolio is going to be 0.9112 times 1.03 plus 0.0209 times the made up 2.20. Plus the beta of, or rather the weight of Nordstrom, which is 0.0679, times its beta of 0.78. And now we can say 0.9112 times 1.03 plus 0.0209 times 2.20 plus 0.0679 times 0.78. Jeez. So the beta of the portfolio comes out to be 1.04. The bottom line here being that Google dominates the beta of the portfolio and it shapes it. So, if you are trying to create a higher risk portfolio, higher risk, higher expected return, if you're trying to create a portfolio that has a portfolio weighted beta that is higher, you might want to consider not going for these 800-pound monster gorillas, because essentially they're just going, their beta, everything about your portfolio is going to be this stock. And that's a problem right there in and of itself. And it goes beyond finance. It goes to the fact that we have allowed these essentially monopolies to, they're distorting portfolios in an important way, because it's really hard to shake these. You have to have it in there. It's part of the market economy. But as soon as you put it in there, it just sort of takes over the whole thing. And that was the point I was trying to make here, although I kind of got caught. I didn't expect Twitter not to have a beta. But you see how the market cap of the whole portfolio is eaten alive by that giant monopoly sitting there in it? And going from there, the beta of the portfolio is eaten alive by the beta of the monster in the mix. That's a problem, not just because it started the companies like this. We've paid the price before. It was the same thing that happened in the early years of the 1900s, when everyone thought it was great to have a large monopoly, a big monopoly. Well, he's charging low prices. He comes into town and he charges low prices for his gasoline. Does anyone remember the Standard Oil of New Jersey, what old Rockefeller was doing, John D.? He'd go into the towns, and he was so large by that time that he would just wipe out all of the competitors. They'd just die. He'd charge a lower price. He'd provide more service at his gas stations. Google Chrome is being adopted by businesses. Internet Explorer, Opera, Safari, Firefox, they're all going away. And then, of course, once they went away, what did old John D. do? He bought up their properties, and then he raised the price of gasoline to the point where people were deciding between driving a car and running their tractors or eating, literally. That's what happens. And in finance, that's what's going on, is essentially the portfolio, the market portfolio, is being distorted rather surprisingly. Let me take you one more time. The market cap of this company is $500 billion. Show you one last thing. GDPs. Right down there. You see it? Google ranks as the 21st, 22nd largest country on earth now. That is a portfolio screwer. It just really messes with your portfolio. That's all I have for you. I thank you.